Translation: Lord Shiva's lotus feet were worshipped by both the demigods and demons, but still, in spite of his exalted position, as soon as he saw that Lord Brahma was there among all the other demigods, he immediately stood up and offered him respect by bowing down and touching his lotus feet, just as Vamana offered his respectful obeisances to Kashyapa Muni. So we don't have a repeat, I just go on and read the purport now?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay, purport. Let me just scroll down here a little bit. Should work like this. All right, purport. Srila Prabhupada. Kashyapa Muni was in the category of living entities, but he had a transcendental son, Vamanadeva, who was an incarnation of Vishnu. Thus, although Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he offered his respects to Kashyapa Muni. Similarly, when Lord Krishna was a child, he used to offer his respectful obeisances to his mother and father, Nanda and Yashoda. Also at the Battle of Kurukshetra, Lord Krishna touched the feet of Maharaj Yudhisthira because the king was his elder. It appears then that the Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva, and other devotees, in spite of their being situated in exalted positions, instructed by practical example how to offer obeisances to their superiors. Lord Shiva offered his respectful obeisances to Brahma because Brahma was his father, just as Kashyapa Muni was the father of Vamana. So I'll just read myself the next two verses. Text 41. Tata pare sida gana maharshibir yevai samantad anu nilalohitam namaskrita praha shashanka shekaram krita pranamam prahasan ivat mabuhu. Translation and short purport. All the sages who were sitting with Lord Shiva, such as Narada and others, also offered their respectful obeisances to Lord Brahma. After being so worshipped, Lord Brahma, smiling, began to speak to Lord Shiva. Purport. Lord Brahma was smiling because he knew that Lord Shiva was not only easily satisfied, but also easily irritated as well. He was afraid that Lord Shiva might be in an angry mood because he had lost his wife and had been insulted by Daksha. In order to conceal this fear, he smiled and addressed Lord Shiva as follows. Text 42. Ramo vacha janetvamisham vishvasya jagato yoni bijayaho shakte shivasya chaparam yattad brahma nirantaram. Purport. A translation, I mean. Lord Brahma said, my dear Lord Shiva, I know that you are the controller of the entire manifestation, the combination father and mother of the cosmic manifestation, and the Supreme Brahman, beyond the cosmic manifestation as well. I know you in that way. Purport. Although Lord Brahma had received very respectful obeisances from Lord Shiva, he knew that Lord Shiva was in a more exalted position than himself. Lord Shiva's position is described in Brahma Sangita. There is no difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva in their original positions. But still, Lord Shiva is different from Lord Vishnu. The example is given of milk and yogurt. Yogurt is non-different from the original milk from which it is made, from which it was made. Om Jnanati Miranda Shah Chananjana Shalakya Chakshu Militamyena Tajmar Shri Gurumayana. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, nice to be back in this wonderful Sangha of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now that I'm back in the USA, I just came from Lima, Peru. So we can discuss a little bit about this question of etiquette. An interesting comparison will be made. And of course, there's the very mysterious tattva of Lord Shiva. Shiva tattva, very mysterious. And his oneness and difference, how it applies to him with Lord Vishnu. That's a controversial topic for many, we can say Hindus, if we can use that term, they use it. That Shaivites are considered one branch of Hinduism. They have Advaitavad, they have the Vaishnavs, they have the Shaivites, they have of course the Shaktas. Sometimes we're grouped in with the Shaktas because we're also Shaktas. We worship the energy of the Lord even more prominently than the Lord in our more esoteric practice, especially in Sri Vrindavan Dham. Anyway, the Shaivites are quite a group. So I think we need to talk a little bit about that. I'm not going to be able to make any definitive argument that, it's going to really advance the cause that much, but at least we'll remind one another what we do know from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra about the relative positions of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. So, you start off with this topic of etiquette. A very interesting comparison comes up, and it's very telling. It's very revealing, in a sense. And it shows, first of all, a comparison between the character of Lord Shiva. His wife was right in some of her last words in that manifestation as Sati. I'm not sure what her name was. Was it Parvati or Uma? What was her name before she was given the name? Maybe it was Sati at the beginning, and then it worked the other way around. That because she destroyed her own body, then that rite of entering the fire is called Sati after the name that she had all along. I think it was like that. Someone could correct me at the end if necessary. So there's a comparison that we've just, in this whole pastime of the disruption of the Daksha Yajna. Now everything went to hell. Then he had the other sacrifice, the next one, and that's when he even got worse, where he, there are sins of commission and sins of omission. Sometimes in modern and contemporary socio-economic dynamics, the point is made, and it's been made over the years, if not the centuries, that the ones that are most responsible for a horrible crime, even collectively in the world, are not the ones that were the direct perpetrators, but even more responsible for all those who knew what was going on and didn't say anything. So, and I'm not talking about in the airports, they say, if you see something, say something. And I'm not referring to that. This is a little different one I'm referring to. So There are crimes of omission. That would be an example where you omitted your duty. You were too afraid to become a whistleblower, something like that. And the vast majority of people are guilty of that. Of course, there are many that are just foolish and don't know what's going on. So that's one. So here's an example of a crime of omission. It was a Prajapati Daksha when his daughter showed up at his second jagya. She was, in a very dangerous situation. She was warned by her husband, Lord Shiva, don't go there, it won't be good for you, they won't treat you well. But she was just impetuous, and she had to go, the nature, whatever. So she had to go. So then, of course, you know what happened. That was the prelude leading up to this attempt by Lord Brahma to pacify Lord Shiva. And we'll talk about the last text where he's slightly smiling. The middle text in him. So that's a crime of omission that Prajapati Daksha, he should have at least done something. When apparently they were separated for quite a while and his daughter shows up, you want to be treated nicely by your father. This is Vedic culture. I mean, the family bonds are so strong. And he didn't do anything. You can say, I didn't do anything. Why should I get punished? Well, that's sometimes worse than doing something bad, is not doing something that you're supposed to do. Sometimes one devotee told a story that someone went to hell and he told Yamaraj, he said, but I didn't do anything. And Yamaraj said, well, that's why you're here, because you should have done something and you didn't do anything. There are so many examples of that. Bhishma Dev, the great Bhishma Dev, and Dronacharya and all that, they had a horrible crime of omission. When Draupadi was being attempted to be stripped naked by the Kurus in front of everybody. The Atsat Sabaya is described by Queen Kunti, the inauspicious, to put it mildly, assembly. And they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything. That was a crime of big crime of omission, and that in itself would justify the Battle of Kurukshetra. So that was Daksha's crime of omission, that he didn't even acknowledge that his daughter had come. And of course she was quite very mortified by that, so mortified that she became mort, and she committed suicide. And naturally that knot is going to be Lord Shiva's known to be Ashutosh. So the word Ashutosh just means easily pleased, but the implication is also Ashukrod. Maybe there's another term for that. You could also become very angry. But easily angry, that's hard to understand, because he wasn't easily angered when at the original insult, when Prajapati Daksha cursed him. He just silently got up and walked out. He didn't try to make any, retaliation at that time. But then when his so-called father-in-law or swather-in-law caused the self-destruction, at least in the external aspect, of his wife, his dear wife, Sati, that was too much. Then the easily angered became activated, you might say. And then we know there was chaos. So now Lord Brahma is trying to... So here's a comparison. I'm finally getting to the real comparison. I think a very revealing comparison is how Lord Brahma treated Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma's son, Prajapati Daksha, treated Lord Shiva. Just see the difference. On the one hand, you have the way that Prajapati Daksha mistreated Lord Shiva. At that time, it wasn't a crime of omission, it was a crime of commission. He cursed him. It says in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 13, I believe it's text 26. I'll tell you the text. I love to get these things right. The only thing I know is a little Bhagavad Gita. Text 29, actually. This samam pasyan hi sarvatra samavastitam ishtaram nihinastyatmanatmanam tato yati param gatim. That one who sees the supersoul in every living being and equal everywhere does not degrade himself by his own mind. Thus he approaches the transcendental destination. So Prajapati Daksha was not up to speed in that. He didn't see the supersoul of Lord Shiva. I don't know exactly the relationship between supersoul and Lord Shiva, but he didn't see that. He didn't. But Lord Shiva did see. He was meditating on the supersoul in the form of Prajapati Daksha. He was actually respecting Prajapati Daksha as part and parcel of that supersoul. Of course, the supersoul is localized. So he shouldn't have become offended. And also another reason he shouldn't have become offended is, as we see in the dealings of Prajapati Daksha's father with Lord Shiva. Just imagine. When Prajapati Daksha entered the assembly and Brahma didn't stand up, he wasn't offended that Lord Brahma didn't stand up. Why should he? He's his father. He was offended because externally he had a son-in-law by the name of Lord Shiva. Archetypical hippie in the eyes of Prajapati Daksha. Oh, if my father didn't make me do it, I would have never allowed this marriage to take place. That was his mindset. Very external. Bahir artha manina, very distracted by externalities. Of course, Prajapati Daksha is a very great personality, and he shows that. After all, we have the, Hamsaguya prayers, very exalted that he uttered. He'll utter in his next incarnation. But he blew it. I mean, Prajapati Daksha, he's seeing the same personality that his own father is offering obeisances to. And he himself, instead of offering obeisances, just insulted him terribly. So you can see the difference in the dealing. We have a reading here how Lord Brahma, he despite the fact that he's the father of Shiva, sometimes there are other descriptions, but in the Bhagavatam we hear how Lord Shiva came out of the forehead, at least in the form of Rudra, and ultimately Lord Shiva. So he was generated by the constrained or the repressed anger of Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is his father. So therefore, he humbly offers obeisances to Lord Brahma, even though Lord Brahma is coming, practically speaking, with straw between the teeth to try to pacify Lord Shiva. And it's interesting and a little challenging in a way. I believe this is the section in Bhagavatam where you get descriptions on the part of Lord Brahma in terms of genealogy, the father of Prajapati, of Lord Shiva, and they seem to imply that Lord Shiva's, the whole nine yards, almost describing Lord Shiva almost as if he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Almost, not completely, but they go very far. Now we have to understand, of course, that Lord Brahma is doing his best to pacify. It's like in Bhagavad Gita, you have at the chapter one, you have Bhavan Bhishmam Chakarnas Cha Kripas Cha Samatim Jayaha. You have that you have the and Duryodhana, and Prabhupada describes him as a very great diplomat. So he's talking to Dronacharya, so he puts Dronacharya's position as a head of that head prior to that of the great Bhishma Dev. Bhavan Bhishmas. First Bhavan is you, and then Bhishmas. So we have many examples of diplomacy. So here, Lord Brahma, maybe somewhat diplomatically exalting Lord Shiva, is everything Siddhanta that he's telling to Lord Shiva? You might say, well, of course it's in Siddhanta, because it's in the Bhagavatam. Well, it's in the Bhagavatam that Lord Krishna was preaching Karma Mimamsa philosophy to Nanda Maharaj, and that's anything but Siddhanta. So then we go into the huge field of hermeneutics, but no, I think it's pretty obviously that the context is extremely important in trying to understand Shastra. Of course, we have the Bhaktivedanta purports, which will be consulted like anything. So, so there's the comparison. On the one hand, you have Prajapati Daksha failing to offer any respect, in fact, cursing Lord Shiva. And then you have Lord Brahma, despite the fact that he's technically the father of Lord Shiva, or actually, however you want to tweak that, offering obeisances to Lord Shiva. Now, Prajapati Daksha, I don't know, he could see that. I think he already had the head. No, he didn't have the head of a goat yet. He was sort of like technically deceased. He had his head cut off, right? So if he could have seen that, he might have blushed or might have been very, very remorseful and regretful the way he treated, not just because of all the chaos that took place, but because he could see his own father, Lord Brahma, is anyway, I don't want to belabor the point, but it's an interesting comparison showing the exalted character of Lord Shiva as compared to the materially tainted culture that we see coming from Prajapati Daksha. All right, so let's go on to this mysterious topic. I didn't have time to delve into the mystery. I looked at, I didn't even have time to look at the purport to the Shiram Yati Dadavikarda Vishesha Yoga Sanjayate Nahitatag Pitakastake Tu Yaksham Bhutam Pitatak Samupaitikarya Govinda Maripurusham Tamaham Jami. The famous Brahma Sangita verse, they're all famous in the Govinda section for us. The Govinda prayers, of course, we only have chapter 5. Lord Chaitanya found the Brahma Sangita in the Adikeshva temple. He was very happy about that. Such a wonderful, wonderful, comprehensive, just one chapter, but so comprehensively glorifying Krishna as the Supreme Govinda, Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God. The name Krishna is also mentioned. Ishvara Parama Krishna, and also Ramadi Mutishu Kala Niyamena Tishtanna Navatarama Karod Bhuvanesha Kintu Krishna Svayam Samabhad Paramakumanya. And Govinda mentioned over and over, Govinda Maripurusham Amaham Jami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. Such a wonderful prayer by Lord Brahma. So, in that text about the curd or the yogurt milk comparison, we get some insight into that the yogurt is a transformation of milk. So it's milk and it's not milk. And we often hear a rather conclusive, logic involved, that you can get yogurt from milk, but you can't get milk from yogurt. So in terms of cause, Krishna's the cause of all causes. He's certainly the cause of Lord Shiva, even if the non-difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva goes deeper than the non-difference between ourselves and Lord Vishnu. We're also non-different from Lord Vishnu qualitatively. But Lord Shiva is getting there even quantitatively. He doesn't, not the whole nine yards, but as we see in the prayers, you'll see it, reading the prayers that follow. I'll also look at it. I hope I remember to do that. And you'll see how even quantitatively, in the sense of the majestic grandeur and position in terms of the universe and in terms of the chain of causes, how up there, as we say, how exalted, actually, Lord Shiva is. So his non-difference with Lord Vishnu goes a lot deeper than our non-difference with Lord Vishnu. He's not even Jiva Tattva, he's Shiva Tattva. He's not naturally situated in either Devi Dham or Hari Dham, but rather in his own Dham, in his own realm. He has his own ontological status. He's in his own realm called Mahesh Dham, as described also in the Brahma Sangita. Galoka namni nicha namni talesh dasya devi mahesha haridamo shuteshu teshu tate prabhava nichiya vikitashti nya govindam purusham tamaham jami. So I was in Arati Yatra in, that's the years when you get to be my age, my dear Vaishnavs. The years go flipping by so quickly. I can't remember if it was like 4 years or 6 years or 7 years. It seems like yesterday. I was in Arati Yatra in Hartford, Connecticut. Our friend Piyari Mohan was there, a transcendental magician. And I was told to do a question and answers booth. So I hardly had any people coming with questions. But then one Hindu, so-called Hindu gentleman, came up to me, and he got into the question of Lord Shiva's status. He wasn't saying that Lord Shiva is greater than Lord Vishnu, but he was saying that he's completely the same. It's completely the same person. Now, aside from any tinge of Advaitavad, impersonalism, or even Mayavad, that prescinding, that means leaving that question aside, just this argument, he was obviously a Shaivite, and he was really, really pushing that envelope of the that Lord Shiva is certainly not at all in any way less than Lord Vishnu. So that was his argument. Now, unfortunately for me, the kid from Brooklyn, he had all kinds of Vedic references and Shastric quotes, and so I had, I almost wished I could have just gotten someone coming into the question and answers booth asking, why do you wear tilak? Now, that would have been easier and much more relaxed kind of thing to deal with. But this was challenging. So I did give the example, of course, of milk and yogurt, and you certainly didn't leave convinced, but I hope that whatever little I had to offer helped him a little bit. But this question comes up. I had a similar problem in Guyana in 1987. I gave a lecture at the Albion Sports Complex after a late Ratiatra arrival. The wheel of the Ratiatra cart broke down, and we went the rest of the route in total darkness, because at that time there weren't streetlights in the cities and the towns, on the one road. So we got to, and then I was giving a lecture, and I had said that that Lord Shiva is a demigod. And then when I went and tried to mingle with the people, I got hell for that. They said, no, he's not a demigod. It's God. He says, it's Lord Shiva, isn't it? So, yeah, we can see from the example of Lord Brahma that they were right, that he wasn't an ordinary demigod. Although Srila Prabhupada, and with justification, he does say, on the most exalted demigod. Sometimes we hear about the, like Indra's the king of the demigods. Indra and some others are considered the chief demigods. But then we hear the term primordial demigods, and then that's Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. So so he was right in the sense, because we see how Lord Brahma is offering respects to Lord Shiva. He's offering obeisances. Never mind that Lord Brahma is, in the Leela, he's Lord Shiva's father. Of course, we heard that in their original forms, non-different. We were hearing that in the purport. We write here, Lord Shiva, it says, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva, in their original positions, there's no difference between them. Interesting statement. Does that refer to Lord Shiva, his archetypical form as Sadashiva? I don't want to go beyond my depth here, or my knowledge base, but just those who know can either confirm or deny that. But anyway, Lord Shiva is not small time, I mean, to put it in the vernacular. I was also looking at the it's become I don't know if I should say favorite, the Bhagavatam verse is not for my enjoyment, but at the present time, the verse that I'm most fascinated by, 11.28.21, I've been speaking about, philosophically speculating about it for a year now. The one where it says that that which did not exist in the past will not exist in the future and has no existence of its own in the present. Anything which is revealed and caused by something else is only that other thing. That is my opinion. And this is Lord Sri Krishna speaking, 11.28.21. So even Lord Shiva in the chain of causes is still at least one step posterior to the prior existence, the supreme existence, in one sense the only existence that is really existence, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, when you say, okay, so therefore he's nothing else but that cause, well, we shouldn't take it the wrong way. Then we would also be nothing else but that cause if you go through the whole chain of causation. But at the same time, it's not that that cause, sarva karana karanam, the cause of all causes, is nothing else but us. That would be blasphemous. And not only is he nothing else but us, but he's also more than only Lord Shiva, because he's also the supreme cause. You can say he's also, of course, when we talk about causality, it usually is a concept which applies in the material world. In the spiritual world, causes are, if the term could be used in the spiritual context, it has a different impact. But still, let's use the term anyway. And even the Vishnu Tattva expansions, and the verse that follows in Brahma Sangita from the milk yogurt comparison verse, is about the describes the original candle, yata dipo. How does it go? Departure avit santanam abhyupecha dipayate vibhita hetu samana dharma. Just like one original candle lights other candles and other candles, but and they all have the same potency, that's okay. But still, that one original candle is the original candle. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Svayam. You can say like that also. And even in terms of quality, Krishna has four qualities, even more than Narayan or Lord Vishnu. So the oneness is there like anything. Ravindra Sarup Prabhu in a lecture, he strongly discouraging us from using a Chintya Beta Beta Tattva to apply to the difference between the oneness and the difference between Krishna and his personal Vishnu Tattva expansions. According to Ravindra Sarup Prabhu, at least at that time, he was stating that there's only oneness, there's not difference. Like Prabhupada says, the only difference between Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna is the color or something like that. So, Hare Krishna. So there's... that's there. But what about Lord Shiva, is what we're talking about? He is more one with Lord Vishnu than we are, to put it mildly. If I would have had time, I would have looked up in the Brahma Brihad Bhagavatamrita. There's some nice reference. I think Gopakumara makes it to Shiva Loka or Mahesh Dham. Someone could confirm that. And then there must be some very nice description there. If we had more time, I can go to the Veda base and look it up. I think we have Bhagavatamrita in the Veda base. Didn't Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita, didn't he speak confidentially with Lord Shiva when he had darshan with him? Lord Shiva had darshan with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya had darshan with Lord Shiva. So there's plenty of respect for Lord Shiva. And here we might find the respect being shown by Lord Brahma to be even, from the point of view of tattva, excessive? Is that a terrible thing to say? I don't want to offend Lord Brahma either. He's a little bit smiling. I'll just end with one very more prosaic example. That when Shamasundara Prabhu tells the story of the most iconic miracle that Prabhupada ever filled off when he got George Harrison to give the $19,000, that's the amount, to print the Krishna book, publish it, print it. So when the lights went off in George Harrison's 123, more or less, room mansion estate where Shamasundara was visiting with him, you know the story that happened, right? After Shamasundara was obliged to drop the bomb and ask George Harrison for money on behalf of Prabhupada, that was verboten. But Srila Prabhupada said, you really have to do it. You ask him, Krishna will help you. So he asked him, and George Harrison's jaw drops, and he looks, like he's going to cry. He had one... very few friends, and his closest friends were the Krishna devotees, because they weren't trying to get anything from him. Just like Krishna really has special favor for like the Jnani Bhakta or the pure Shuddha Bhakta because they're not trying to get anything from them. So Krishna is especially friendly with such persons. So I'm not comparing one with the other, but George Harrison was so friendly disposed towards the devotees. And then when Shamasundara, you know, hit him up and asked him for the money to print the book, George Harrison was dismayed or worse and totally devastated. And just at that moment, a huge lightning bolt struck the mansion and the lights went off, which is not a common thing in England in modern times. And then after less than a minute, the lights went on again. And then you have, in a general sense, a similar situation where George Harrison was nervously smiling. How much did Prabhupada need to print the book? And he was taking out his checkbook and ready to go, as far as this, the version I heard. So I did hear that story directly from Shamasundara when I was in Vrindavan a long time ago, relatively long time ago, during Kartik. So here we have Lord Brahma is also like a little bit apprehensive, we can say. So he's also a little bit smiling. He's trying to show Lord Shiva that he's not fearful, but he is actually fearful because Lord Shiva is so powerful. It's kind of, you give credit where credit is due. So Lord Shiva gives credit to Lord Brahma by offering obeisances. Prajapati Taksha couldn't even give the time of day to Lord Shiva. So there's that comparison again, which you spoke about at the beginning. So what I'd like to do, just to keep us focused, is just read the English translations of the three texts we're looking at this morning. Lord Shiva's lotus feet were worshipped by both the demigods and demons, but still, in spite of his exalted position, as soon as he saw that Lord Brahma was there amongst all the other demigods, he immediately stood up and offered him respect by bowing down and touching his lotus feet, just as Vamanadeva offered his respectful obeisances to Kashyapa Muni. All the sages who were sitting with Lord Shiva, such as Narada and others, also offered their respectful obeisances to Lord Brahma. After being so worshipped, Lord Brahma, smiling, began to speak to Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord Shiva, I know that you are the controller of the entire material manifestation, the combination father and mother of the cosmic manifestation, and the supreme Brahman beyond the cosmic manifestation as well. I know you in that way." So even in this text, we hear amazing exaltation of Lord Shiva that we have in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 9, text 17, I believe it is, Pitasya Matadatta Pitamaha. What is it? The one, you're the father and the mother of the universe, he's saying. So here we're getting that description applied to Lord Shiva, the father and mother of the cosmic manifestation. One other little quick thing that I forgot to mention is that in terms of the etiquette, it gets real complicated because Prajapati Daksha and Lord Shiva, besides being father and son-in-law, but they're also, cosmically speaking, brothers. They're both sons of Lord Brahma. So their relationship is threefold or fourfold or manifold relationship. The etiquette is very nuanced, the proper etiquette. But it's a no-brainer. I just shouldn't put it like that because I don't want to offend the position of Lord Prajapati Daksha. But it shouldn't have been that difficult for him to at least not curse him, at least offer little respect to him, at least not mortify Lord Shiva's daughter Sati when she showed up at the sacrifice, but he was puffed up. He got puffed up and could not understand. Then he came to his senses, although he had to settle for the head of a goat. That'll be the concessions. I think that those are the concessions that Lord Shiva will grant. How different personalities who were killed and injured will be able to function again, but in somewhat awkward ways. So thank you for your kind attention. It's we only have about 5 minutes before the end of the time, but we have a tendency to go over if necessary. Any questions or comments, please?
I've unmuted everybody. Does anyone have a question or a comment?
Oh, I'm sorry, I had my mute button hit here. So, with regard to Lord Shiva, what do you think in the age of Kali, it's almost become popular amongst New Age people to worship Lord Shiva? It's pretty common in our temples. People come by and they're worshippers of Lord Shiva. What kind of benefit do you think they're getting? And I guess as I'm thinking out loud as I'm asking the question, I suppose it would be a fact of how they're worshiping Lord Shiva. But I mean, Lord Shiva is incredibly merciful, particularly to those who are very fallen. That's, I guess, part of his purpose of coming is to, that's why he would wear skulls and go to crematoriums and cover his body with ashes and smoke ganja to attract those that are really in the mode of ignorance. And the mode of ignorance being so prominent in this age of Kali, what do you think the benefit might be?
Yeah, well, you partially answered your own question. We can make a list. You know, it'll be an exercise, a homework assignment. We can try right now and make a list of why people are attracted to worship Lord Shiva. One is because it gives them an excuse to smoke pot. It's a lame excuse, but, you know, Prabhupada does mention that a number of times, even in Bhagavad Gita, we shouldn't try to drink the ocean of poison like Lord Shiva, you know. And try to imitate him by taking poison in the form of drugs, or even if pot is not poison, but it's not cool. Then another reason is it helps one express one's impersonal by the default, nirvishesha sanyavadi, the default mode in the Western world and the Eastern world as well, seems to be towards impersonalism. So by worshiping Lord Shiva, unless someone is such a Shivite that he's really thinking he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that's their form of theism, that the God, I worship one God, there's only one God, it's Lord Shiva. I don't know how many people think like that. I think most of them, it's just that you can kind of squeeze them in to the for supreme position because it's up for grabs. Ultimately, everything is Brahman and all forms, even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, even Krishna. I'm not saying this, but they say that they're made of material energy, therefore they're Maya, Mayavad. So that's another reason. Another reason, I think, is that he's such a fascinating personality. You know, he's just like a certain romantic like it's a mystery, it's far out, it's like better than science fiction, that you get a personality like that. The dances and the whole cosmic manifestation falls apart because of his dancing. And he does look, you know, he's far out. I mean, Lord Shiva's really far out. You know, be popular with people that like things that are far out. So anyway, we can go on with the list. I just suggested several reasons.
Yeah, as you're speaking and listening, I'm thinking that it seems like there must be some benefit, even if they think he's supreme. Just like, for example, the Yamadutas, they thought that that Yamaraj was the supreme, and that's why they couldn't believe when they were stopped in the Ajamil Lila. He told them, you can't touch them, you have to leave them alone. And the Yamadutas were astounded. You mean there's somebody higher than you? I think that's where the famous verse is, Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, was spoken. Maybe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But even if they think these things, and even if they smoke pot, just like sometimes Prabhupada would say, even if the wino, if every time he takes a sip of wine, he's thinking that, oh, this is the taste of this wine, this is Krishna, then let him drink, he'll become purified. So in the same way that Lord Shiva is so, he's almost Krishna. What is it, 80-some percent? Somebody knows, 86%?
Yeah, well, the abyss is as good as a mile, you can say. You don't get it by 80. You have to be 100% Krishna, you know. Of course, Lord Narayan, then you can say, make that argument, that he also falls a little short. But Lord Shiva would not be pleased so much by people who were, except if you were really like a ghost and a hobgoblin and a demon and a djinn and all these kind of creatures, and he knows they don't know any better, so if they worship me as the supreme, we'll let them do that and they'll benefit. But generally, Lord Shiva describes himself in the fourth canto, I think that's just in the current context, Vishuddha Satvam Vasudeva Shabditam Yatiyate Tatna something apavritam, etc. Sabdecha Tasmin Bhagavan Vasudevo. Where's the last line? He had Hoksa Jome Namasa Vidyate. I'm always in pure Krishna consciousness. So he's Vaishnava. Vaishnavanam Yatashamu. So, anyway, different, you know, it's Kali Yuga and there are many concessions. And I guess even before Kali Yuga, Lord Shiva gave shelter to the most fallen. And his you heard Sati's panegyric exaltation, glorification of her husband for that very reason, that he gives shelter to very fallen tamasic people, and even displays ostensibly some tamasic features. That's all I have to say about it. But I just all right. Before we end, anyone else want to ask a question or say anything? All right. If no one has any question or comment, we can end here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maharaj.
The opportunity good. To participate.
How long will you be? How long will you be in the United States? We've got good connection.
I'll be here until I go to Mayapur on about the 25th or so of February.
I'll see you there. I'll see you there then. We got the SUBA meetings and the SGGS meetings.
Yeah, I look forward to getting to know you better even.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you.
It would be great. All right, thank you all so much. Jagat Guru, Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.